Support for Yale Cancer Answers comes from AstraZeneca, a biopharmaceutical business that is pushing the boundaries of science to deliver new cancer medicines. More information at AstraZeneca-US.com. Welcome to Yale Cancer Answers with Drs. Anish Chagpar and Stephen Gore. I'm Bruce Barber. Yale Cancer Answers features the latest information on cancer care by welcoming oncologists and specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer. This week, it's a conversation about organ transplant for cancer patients with Dr. Sukru Emery. Dr. Emery is a professor of transplant surgery at Yale School of Medicine, and Dr. Gore is a professor of internal medicine and hematology at Yale and director of hematologic malignancies at Smilo Cancer Hospital.
So I don't think that many in our audience, including myself, think much about organ transplantation and cancer together. As a matter of fact, in my field, of course, in blood malignancies, we know that some people who've had organ transplants, unfortunately, sometimes develop certain kinds of lymphomas, very rarely, that we have to worry about. But that's a different story. So how does organ transplantation interface with cancer?
Well, thank you for the question, and I'm going to focus on liver only.
Liver, okay.
In this topic, that because there are many organ transplants, as you know, that includes heart, lung, liver, kidney, and pancreas, intestine, bone marrow, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And also recently we do have composite tissue graft transplant, such as extremity transplant, uterus
wow.
transplant, and so on and so forth.
We read about face transplants in the newspaper.
Exactly, that face is another one. But today I'm going to focus on liver transplantation. Transplantation of the liver can be done for many different reasons, and that might be viral diseases such as hepatitis C, hepatitis B, very rarely hepatitis A with acute liver failure form, and also alcoholic liver disease and some genetic metabolic liver diseases such as tyrosinemia, urea cycle disorders.
Things which I don't know anything about, and our audience doesn't know anything about either. Yeah.
But mainly in adults, we do transplant for hepatitis C and alcoholic liver disease, PSC, PBC, autoimmune liver diseases, and any cirrhotic patient can develop cancer.
I don't think our audience probably knows what a cirrhotic patient is. As a matter of fact, I'm a little concerned. Like, let's say I'm a baby boomer, which I am, and I find out that I have hepatitis C, which hopefully I don't, but many people do, and they don't know it. Does everybody with hepatitis C need to get a liver transplant? That's pretty scary.
If it's not treated, now, thank God, we have new treatments, and then when someone gets an hepatitis C, development of cirrhosis takes somewhere around 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before cirrhosis develops, which is what we call cirrhosis, the development of scar tissue in the liver.
Scar tissue, I see.
So when it happens, and there is no returning back, and patients are going to need a transplant. But if hepatitis C diagnosed early and treated with the new medications, which 97% to 100% success rate.
Wow.
Then liver will regenerate itself, and therefore that transplant will be totally avoided.
So that's a good advertisement for baby boomers to make sure they've gotten some preventative medical care, and if they're in that risk group, gets screened for hepatitis they may not know that they
have. That is correct. And the patients with high risk group and IV drug users and people that they get blood transfusions and most of the times we do not know how hepatitis C was acquired by the patients. Sometimes beauty parlors, and if they are not careful and they are using the same instruments for the everyone, blood may be the disease will be transmitted to a new individual. So therefore, in a high-risk group, and we suggest that they should check their hepatitis C serologies. Mm-hmm. If they are positive, yes, there's a treatment.
Gotcha. So, but when you say cirrhosis then, and you've just explained that this is a scarring in the liver, you mentioned, if I understand it correctly, there are many ways to have that happen outside of hepatitis infections, and you mentioned alcoholic liver disease and others.
That's right, hemochromatosis and another one, and then that's why, and this they are in our specialty are liver doctors, what we call hepatologists. Any patient with liver cirrhosis or liver developed scar tissue, that is routine that we will check certain things. Mm-hmm. One is what we call tumor marker alpha fetoprotein. Another one, every 6 months we do imaging studies, either ultrasonogram or CT scan or MRI, mm-hmm. just to follow this patient carefully, because once scar tissue is performed, and scar tissue causes inflammation that may lead to development of cancer, liver cancer, what we call hepatocellular carcinoma.
Well, how often will patients with cirrhosis develop hepatocellular carcinoma?
They are estimate that within 5 years and after diagnosis of, let's say, hepatitis C, and approximately 20% of the patients will develop hepatocellular carcinoma.
Oh, that's a lot.
It is
one
a lot.
One in five. Mm-hmm.
And indeed, in the United States, the number of HCC-related death is increasing. 2018, we estimate that, approximately the 60,000 individuals will develop HCC.
That's liver cancer, right?
Liver cancer. Mm-hmm. And then among them, and the approximately 40% will expire just because of HCC-related complications.
And I think maybe we should just clarify for our listening audience the difference between the kinds of liver cancer that you're speaking about, which arise in the liver, and, you know, many patients or listeners know people who had a tumor in their breast or colon and then develop what they think is liver cancer. Can you explain that?
Correct. And the liver cancer or hepatocellular carcinoma is developing from the liver cells. Mm-hmm. That's what we call primary liver cancer. Mm-hmm. And there is another category, what we call metastatic liver cancers. Someone who had breast cancer or colon cancer or ovarian cancer, then the cancer cells and travels through the vessels and nests in the liver. And then it is metastatic liver cancer, mm-hmm. which means that primary of the tumor is somewhere else, but it metastasized in the liver.
And if we looked at those cells, they would look like usually like the original cells, more like a breast cancer tumor than a liver cancer.
That's right. Yeah. So then let's talk about the pathologic diagnosis. Mm-hmm. When we have any mass in the liver, we do imaging studies. Sometimes imaging studies are pretty good to diagnose without biopsy to primary liver cancer. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if there is a secondary, we always do the biopsy. And the biopsy, when we evaluate the biopsy under the microscope, what we see, biopsy will show us that primary of the tumor is coming from either ovary or colon or breast or somewhere else. That will be the way that we can diagnose it.
Okay. And so really, for the purpose of this conversation, we're mostly restricted to the kinds that arise in the liver. Is that
right? That's
right.
And okay. Today we are going to strictly talk about primary liver cancer.
I see. And those other cancers, it doesn't really matter if the liver has scar tissue or not, right? The liver is just like a sponge that can soak up these cells.
Correct,
right?
Correct. And we do not need to have cancer, the cirrhosis or scarring of the liver to develop other metastatic cancers.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Now, you mentioned that people who have cirrhosis or scarring of the liver are followed by liver specialists, hopefully, and they do some blood tests on a regular basis and scans on a regular basis.
That's right.
To detect early tumors, if possible, right?
That's right. So early diagnosis is really important. That's the aim for scrutinizing the patient, that we will know And if then small tumor is developing, if we capture the tumor early, for sure treatment is going to be easier.
Uh-huh.
And that we have different treatment modalities, which we will talk about.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong, please, that if you're screening people every 6 months, a tumor can't get so big in 6 months. Am I wrong about that?
Most of the time you are right, but sometimes we have surprises as well. And
wow.
Then sometimes tumor grows very fast. And I just want to make sure that everyone understands. And the balance between the tumor and the host, the body, is something amazing. Sometimes it works in favor of the body or patient, and sometimes it works in favor of tumor.
Hmm.
Tumor may grow very fast, but you are right. Most of the time that tumor growth is not going to be very fast if we follow them carefully.
So what happens if, say, I'm one of these people who have cirrhosis, unfortunately, and I'm being monitored diligently and leading a good life, and they detect a tumor and they suspect that it may be liver cancer. What happens next?
Well, depending on the tumor location, depending on the tumor size, and also depending on how sick the patient with liver scarring.
Mm-hmm.
Because liver scarring or liver cirrhosis will cause a lot of damage in the body.
Medical problems.
So, that's right. Mm-hmm. So many medical problems, and that includes in the development of fluid in the abdomen, losing muscles, and the patients will become jaundiced, and the scleras and eyes, they become yellow.
Uh-huh.
That's what we call jaundice. And they may have some itching, pruritus, and they lose their muscle mass, and their coagulation or blood clotting is not going to be normal, and they may develop many infections.
Hmm.
So therefore, that depending on how sick the patient, related to liver cirrhosis, and depending on the tumor location and size, we may craft many different treatment modalities.
Mm-hmm.
And we can use many different modalities.
Well,
yes.
Let's start with a really relatively fit person. If that exists in this category.
It is. It's possible that, the patient may have what we call compensated liver cirrhosis, which means that someone who's working full-time and good energy level, but liver cirrhotic.
Uh-huh. If I saw them on the street, I wouldn't think they're sick.
Exactly. You mm-hmm. are right on that. So then the tumor may develop. Those patients, if we capture the tumor early, then our option is, depending on the location of the tumor, we may resect the tumor, surgically remove the tumor.
Wow.
Or we can use what we call ablation techniques,
mm-hmm.
and which we have many different forms of them. Sometimes what we call radio frequency or microwave ablation.
Microwaves?
Exactly.
You put them in an oven.
No, we don't. But what it is basically that we have under the ultrasound guidance and our interventional radiologists, they stick a needle the middle of the tumor.
Wow.
And then they generate with the microwave, and because the tip of the needle will become really hot and with the microwave. And then with that or radio frequency ablation, that's the same thing. The aim is just to cook the tumor.
Tumor
becomes really totally dead.
Wow.
So then that's what we call microwave ablation or radio frequency ablation.
Mm-hmm.
Another technique our interventional radiologists, they use that they will stick a needle in the one of the groin arteries,
mm-hmm.
that travel through the with the small catheters, they will travel
similar to what you would do with a heart cath.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to the heart cath, they travel to the vessels through the vessels into the liver, get close to the tumor, and first they give a high dose of chemotherapy directly in the tumor. And then they knock down the vessels, arteries, feeding the tumor. Once the tumor becomes once the tumor lose all arterial supply, then tumor will become necrotic. Then this is another way of handling the tumor, what we call transarterial chemoembolization, or TACE.
Wow, this is really fascinating, and I'm going to want to talk more about that after the break. But right now, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute.
Support for Yale Cancer Answers comes from AstraZeneca, working to eliminate cancer as a cause of death. Learn more at AstraZeneca-US.com. This is a medical minute about smoking cessation. There are many obstacles to face when quitting smoking, as smoking involves the potent drug nicotine, but it's a very important lifestyle change, especially for patients undergoing cancer treatment. Quitting smoking has been shown to positively impact response to treatments, decrease the likelihood that patients will develop second malignancies, and increase rates of survival. Tobacco treatment programs are currently being offered at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers and operate on the principles of the U.S. Public Health Service clinical practice guidelines. All treatment components are evidence-based, and therefore all patients are treated with FDA-approved first-line medications for smoking cessation, as well as smoking cessation counseling that stresses appropriate coping skills. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Answers. This is Dr. Stephen Gore. I'm joined tonight by my guest, Dr. Sukru Emery. We are discussing organ transplant for cancer patients. Sukru, before the break, you were telling a fascinating story of patients who have an isolated liver cancer tumor in their cirrhotic liver, but they're pretty healthy, and you told us you can cook the tumor with microwaves, which sounded kind of gross to me, but I'll take your word for it. And then you mentioned that radiologists can put a catheter in and choke off their blood supply. That doesn't sound super pleasant either. Are those effective therapies?
Yes, they are. That we use those therapies as a bridge to transplantation many times. And if patients are healthy and if tumor is removable, we also prefer to do liver resections, which means resections mean that removing the disease part of the liver together with tumor with margin that with normal liver, healthy liver tissue around it. Healthy meaning that there is no tumor involvement. So the clear margins. So that is also a good treatment for patients with HCC, hepatocellular carcinoma, or liver cancer, I must say. Recently, we start doing this operation using a laparoscopic technique,
what we call
robotic surgery, that we do not need to make a large incision, that we work with the small ports and they work inside via these ports, remove the tumor, and then with a small incision, we take the tumor out of the body. So that will allow us to keep the patients less in the hospital, and they don't need to deal with a large incision and the infection related to that, and so on and so forth. That's a cool technique.
Yeah, not exactly like gallbladder surgery. I'm sure it's more complicated.
The surgery is surgery, and I cannot say that any surgery is easy. Having done this job last 35 years, that I can tell, sometimes we start the case as an easy case, and it will become a disaster. Sometimes you think that's going to be difficult, but it will go very nicely and smoothly.
Wow!
So surgery is surgery. We will inform our patients before surgery all the complications and other things.
Of course.
But I believe that honestly is the best policy, and we don't, I personally and my colleagues as well, we don't want to sugarcoat anything. And patient and family should know all the complications, side effect, and the problems with the surgery, sure. pros, cons, and everything. We discuss. We don't need to scare them, but we will give them the right information.
Of course. Well, I wonder, since they come in with scarred liver in the first place, now you're taking out, I don't know, a third of the liver or half the liver? How much do you take
out? Well, you know, if there's a scar tissue in the liver and we are limited to remove on which part of the tumor, we have certain tests, and I don't want to get into details.
Of course.
But, if the tumor is central, that will require removing large part of the liver, we may prefer to use ablation techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Then we list the patient for transplantation, and the ultimate goal is do the transplant for those patients. But if tumor is tumor's location is suitable for resection
towards one of the edges, say
towards the edges, the only located the one lobe of the tumor, lung
of the liver,
then we'll be able to perform the resection.
Mm-hmm.
Still, resection is considered the gold standard for the treatment of the cancer.
I see. But in the rest of their liver is good enough to take over?
Well, we have certain calculations, as I said.
I see.
We measure the liver volume with mm-hmm. the imaging techniques, and then we calculate the volume we are going to remove.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have certain calculations whether the remnant liver, the part we are going to leave with the patient, will be enough to cope with the metabolic needs of the patient or
mm-hmm.
not. If that's the case, we prefer to do resection. If it's not, we go with the ablation technique. And when we go to ablation techniques, and the ultimate goal is going to be transplanting the patient.
Well, why do these patients who have had these ablation techniques still need a transplant? Is it because of the underlying cirrhosis, or because there's a chance you still haven't killed all the tumor cells?
The ablation techniques and the technology is getting better, but recurrence rate can occur. Recurrence mm-hmm. may occur in the ablation cavity or around that, or sometimes, and since the liver is tumorigenic, which means that the liver has scar tissue everywhere, other tumors can pop up in other places.
Not related to the first one necessarily.
Not related to the first one necessarily. Therefore, that ultimate goal, cirrhotic patients, will be the transplant.
I see. But it's not so easy to get a liver donated, right? I mean, there's a waiting list, I think.
That is right. Anyone who meets the criteria to be listed, we list. And there's a national organization, what we call UNOS. UNOS stands for United Network for Organ Sharing. This is the governing body of all organ transplants in the United States. It's the contractor to HHS, federal government agency, basically. So once we list the patients, and patients should wait on the list, there is a standard allocation algorithm for liver transplantation, what in adults, what we call MELT, Model End-Stage Liver Disease Scoring System. Based on the patients and the liver function test, everyone will get score, and that score goes lowest is the 6 and highest is the 40. Based on that, they were listed. Then they wait on the list until a suitable organ offer becomes available.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, as you mentioned, then the finding an organ is very difficult. Organ shortage is very acute. There is a big gap between supply and demand of these organs. Therefore, every year, approximately 20% of the listed patients expire
wow.
while they are waiting because of the organ shortage.
Mm-hmm.
A transplant society, we did a lot of developments to alleviate the organ shortage. That's what we use, and the extended criteria organs, and also we do use living donor liver transplantation.
I was going to ask you about that.
Which is a good way to alleviate the organ shortage.
And can that be done even in this case of these patients with liver cancer? Can you use the partial
exactly.
liver
yes.
transplant?
Yes, that we can do. Indeed, in early days of living donor liver transplantation, and most of our patients were patients with liver cancer, actually.
I see.
Because, as you mentioned, that and that I actually echoed the same thing. Sometimes patients are healthy and liver functions are perfectly fine. Their MELD score is going to be very low.
On
the other hand, there is a tumor in the liver growing, causing trouble. So then they may not get the organ offers timely. This was in the past, and that's why we did more living donor liver transplantation for cancer patients. But now with the new the organ allocation algorithm, then cancer patients, and as long as their tumor is under control, they may be eligible to get extra MELD points, MELD scores, then
because they have cancer.
Since they have a cancer, mm-hmm. Yes.
And on these partial living donor transplants, are the donors in general people from the family?
Not necessarily. Then we do Good Samaritan donors, we do friends and the neighbors and the. And the altruistic donors, and we use many different types of donors. This is the most important thing for us, that this is the gift of life. It should come to the bottom of the donor's heart. And buying, selling organs is the federal crime. There should not be any, fault play. As long as the people are genuine and people, they want to donate, we are okay to use them as donors. I must say that the donor evaluation is very tedious. And what I call it, that the donor evaluation is the best possible checkup anyone ever can get.
I bet, yeah.
So that there are many tests, there are many exams and cardiac evaluations, imaging studies, head to toe, and everything else. Then we do many calculations, and the part we are going to take from the donor should be enough for the recipient. Liver part we are going to leave with the donor should be enough for the donor's initial functions. Liver, what we call blessed organ or privileged organ, the reason what the liver grows back.
Mm-hmm.
So that if we take the health of the liver, liver grows back to normal size.
No kidding.
And approximately 6 weeks to 8 weeks time frame.
No kidding.
So
that's fascinating.
It is a fascinating thing, but indeed, and this is known since ancient Greek. If you remember, God Zeus punishing Prometheus by stealing the fire,
mm-hmm.
And he was chained to rock. And every morning, eagle comes, eats the liver, and during the night, liver regenerates and grows back. And it goes on and on. So since then, we do know liver is a privileged organ that grows back. It takes approximately 6 weeks to 8 weeks. It's not that fast I mentioned in the mythology. But on the other hand, it takes 6 to 8 weeks time frame and grows back. Based on the studies we are done, as well as the others, the growth of the liver is somewhere around 98% to 103%.
Wow, that's fascinating. And it still seems like a tremendous act of altruism to do this because, you've mentioned all the intensive medical investigations that need to be performed, but I imagine the surgery is not pleasant either.
Well,
for the donor.
For the donor, and yes, then they are going to have pain. They are going to have incision. We are planning to do the donor operation with robotically that they can have less incision and the better outcome and less pain for sure. When it comes to donor evaluation, we don't want to have any stone unturned that we can kick ourselves later on. That's the complete evaluation. An explanation of all the complications and other things. And donors are our heroes. I mean, despite the fact that they are going to have pain, they are going to have possible complications, and they want to do this thing, they go through. That's why they are our heroes, and we do everything to make them better. During the case and after the case as well. Our commitment to donors is forever. We do see them yearly follow up and as long as they come. But most of them, they say, hey, they, you know, 2-3 years later.
I'm fine.
You know, I'm fine, Dr. Emre. You know, just should I
ready
come?
Ready to donate,
you know?
Again, right?
Of course they cannot, but, you know, I wish that they can come the yearly visits every time. But sometimes we have a hard time to convince them to come for, you know, yearly checkup.
Because
by the way, I want to say one more thing. When they donate, they don't need to pay any single cent for this operation. Everything is covered by the recipient insurance.
I see. Yeah. Well, you know, we had you and I had an agenda of many more things to talk about, but believe it or not, we're out of time. It's been great having you on Yale Cancer Answers. It's been a terrific show about liver cancer, and we will have you back shortly and get to the rest of our list because we have a lot of fascinating things to talk about.
Thank you. And I want to say last thing that, you know, after transplant, if tumor is in the liver, if that's treated with previously the resection or the ablation techniques, after transplant, patient's outcome is excellent.
Dr. Sukru Emre is a professor of transplant surgery at Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions, the address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and past editions of the program are available in audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. I'm Bruce Barber, reminding you to tune in each week to learn more about the fight against cancer here on Connecticut Public Radio.